KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have cloudy skies, some drizzle and 50 degrees. We look for cloudy skies today, rain and isolated thunder showers, a high of 58. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. Two people were arrested on burglary charges in Creston Sunday afternoon. According to Creston police, 39-year-old Seth Preston and 31-year-old Jessica Shadley, both of Creston, were arrested Sunday afternoon at the Union County Law Enforcement Center on charges of burglary in the third degree. Preston was also charged with possession of a controlled substance, third offense. He was later released from the Union County Jail on a $10,000 bond. Shadley was released from the Adams County Jail on a $5,000 bond. At around 2:30 a.m. Sunday, 27-year-old Mark Lopez of Creston was arrested for driving while barred. He was later released on $2,000 bond. Saturday afternoon, 19-year-old Desiree Osterhout of Creston was arrested at the Union County Law Enforcement Center on a Union County warrant for theft in the second degree. She was later released on $5,000 bond. 35-year-old Crystal Oxenrider of Creston was cited and released Saturday afternoon on a charge of allowing an animal to run at large. She was released on a promise to appear in court. And 39-year-old Demian Garrison of Creston was arrested Saturday morning for disorderly conduct, interference with official acts, and violation of a protection order. Friday afternoon, Creston police arrested 42-year-old Timothy Hansen of Creston for driving while suspended. He was later released on a $300 bond. In other news, a Creston woman reported Friday that she was the victim of an IRS phone scam. The woman lost about $250 in the scam. And a woman reported Saturday that someone slashed a tire on a vehicle belonging to a family member while the vehicle was parked in the 400 block of North Oak Street in Creston. The incident took place sometime between 2:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. Saturday, the loss estimated at $100. Western Iowans are divided about the merits of industrial wind projects being planned around the region. Chicago-based Invenergy wants to build almost 170 wind turbines in Sac and Ida counties in the next year, enough to power 90,000 homes. Mason Fleener, an Ida County farmer, says he's worried about the noise and the view of large turbines on the horizon.
If you know anything about cattle, when it's real windy, cattle don't work real good in the wind. They can't hear what's going on around them. I'm the same way. I don't like to listen to these things every day.
And Invenergy developed another wind farm in the county that's been operating for about 2 years. The county estimates it gains more than $2 million each year from industrial wind energy after taxes. Ida County Supervisors Board Chairman Rhett Leonard said revenue from the turbine property values benefits road infrastructure projects.
The good thing about this is we were to the point where our roads and infrastructure were deteriorating so quickly, and it's such a high price item to replace and to maintain. That we were getting to the point where, you know, we didn't know what we were going to do with these.
After the first phase of Invenergy's initial project in the area was complete, about 500 residents petitioned the county to have wind turbines be at least 1 mile away from a house. The county established a code saying they have to be at least 1,500 feet away. In a statement, Invenergy says it builds projects where landowners have voluntarily signed easements or leases. In Adair County, an amended ordinance setting a 2,000-foot setback from non-participating residents and an 800-foot setback for participating property owners associated with two Mid-American Energy Wind Farms has its third and final reading set to take place at the next meeting of the Adair County Board of Supervisors. When complete, a total of nearly 500 turbines will be spread throughout the county. Construction began last summer, but the erection of turbines has been met with public pushback over noise, visual pollution, or bird safety concerns. State Auditor Mary Mosman said she cannot say when a review of the state's Medicaid program will be released to the public. In June, Mosman announced her office would examine the data to determine if Medicaid costs have been reduced since private companies assumed management of patient care. The move to privatize the system has become a political issue in the governor's race. Mosman, a Republican who is also seeking re-election, says she cannot answer specifics about a work in progress, but she says the final report from her office will provide financial clarity about Medicaid costs.
It will be issued. I just can't give you an exact date, or I would be also behaving politically in an office because I would be dropping the statutory duties and the other ongoing investigations. Everything we do in the auditor's office is important.
Rob Sand, the Democrat challenging Mosman, said he agrees the examination shouldn't be political, but Sand says the auditor's office needs to equip voters with the facts about what's happened since Medicaid was privatized in 2016.
This is the office that's supposed to be a watchdog for Iowa taxpayers. And I think one thing that a watchdog should be doing is as soon as there's a major change, you ought to be sniffing around. We are in a state of upheaval. with this issue.
Sand and Mosman made their comments this weekend during an appearance on Iowa Public Television's Iowa Press program. About 680,000 low-income, disabled, and elderly Iowans are enrolled in Medicaid. Former Governor Terry Branstad predicted taxpayers would have saved more than $200 million by now due to switching the system to private management. However, a recent report showed per-patient costs increased 6.5% this past year and are projected to jump another 11% this year. Elsewhere in state news, several media organizations reported late Sunday night that negotiations between the U.S. and Canada have resulted in a newfangled NAFTA, that's North American Free Trade Agreement, and that President Trump will rebrand the trade deal as USMCA. Radio Iowa's O.K. Henderson reports.
Midnight on September 30th was the deadline President Trump set for renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement. Mexico's president agreed to renegotiated terms in late August, but talks between Canada and the U.S. stalled. The U.S. demanded a reduction in Canada's tariffs on American dairy products. Canada was insisting on keeping a system in place for resolving future trade disputes. President Trump is expected to approve the new pact with Canada's prime minister and with Mexico's president before he leaves office December 1st. Congress would then have 60 days to review and vote on the new agreement. I'm O.K. Henderson.
Canada is Iowa's largest export market. Mexico is number two. Plant researchers at Iowa State University are working together with counterparts at the University of Florida, Wisconsin, and Washington State University to improve the breeding of a summer favorite. ISU agronomy professor Thomas Luberstadt has worked on improving field corn varieties and says sweet corn research has some new variables.
You're very much focused on eating quality traits besides the general yield and resistance and stress tolerance traits. So it's adding to the complexity of finding the best varieties.
Roswell Garst developed the first hybrid field corn in Iowa back in the 1930s. Luberstadt says there have been years of developments and thousands of dollars spent on improving field corn. Sweet corn has not gotten as much attention, in part because its production is small compared to the millions of bushels of field corn grown each year.
Field corn has a much bigger market because it has a lot of acreage. That means it's not that big of a business, which means the breeding programs involved in sweet corn breeding are usually smaller. The budget is smaller than that of field corn, so that makes it a little bit more challenging to deal with more traits.
He says finding the right tasting sweet corn varieties is still done in an old-fashioned way.
Currently, that still has to be done by persons, ultimately, who do bite tests or who really taste it, and it's part of this project to try to identify methods that can quantify taste ultimately and then at least help to pre-select the more promising candidates.
Luberstadt's research is trying to use technology from field corn that more quickly produces inbred lines of corn that creates the hybrid varieties. It's hoped that they can incorporate the good tasting qualities needed for sweet corn into those quick breeding methods.
There are groups in the project focusing on trying to replace taste panels by methods, biochemical methods that can be applied instead and help to predict which of those plants have likely the best taste that correlates with what is found by taste panels.
Those chemical methods could then be used to incorporate the taste into the faster breeding process. The researchers are sharing a four-year, $7.3 million grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture Specialty Crop Research Initiative. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, some 100 Indonesian troops have left the city of Makassar in the southern Sulawesi Island to help with rescue efforts in the country's quake and tsunami-hit areas. The troops boarded a naval ship this morning and headed to the hard-hit cities of Palu and Donggala. Indonesia's disaster agency says the death toll from the massive earthquake and tsunami has increased slightly to 844, and nearly 50,000 people have been displaced by the disaster. President Trump will make a statement about a revamped North American free trade deal at around 11 o'clock this morning. Eastern Time. The White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted that Trump will speak from the Rose Garden. The agreement between the United States, Mexico, and Canada came together Sunday just before midnight deadline imposed by the U.S. The new deal will be called, as I mentioned before, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. It replaces a 24-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. FBI agents have interviewed one of three women accusing Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct. Republicans and Democrats are quarreling over whether the FBI will have enough time and freedom to conduct a thorough investigation before a vote on the nomination for Kavanaugh, who denies the women's accusations. The White House insists it's not micromanaging the new one-week review of Kavanaugh's background. In our funeral announcements this morning, Rudy Moses, age 21, of Atlantic, died September 5th at CCMH. A massive Christian burial for Rudy Moses will be today at 10 o'clock at the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Home of Atlantic has arrangements. Harry Fredrickson, age 77, of rural Linden, died September 24th. Funeral services for Harry Fredrickson will be today at 10:30 at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. Raymond Anderson, age 94, of Harlan, died Thursday. Funeral services for Raymond Anderson will be today at 11 a.m. at Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan. John Schmidt, age 74, of Griswold and formerly of Atlantic, died Friday. A celebration of life where John Schmidt will be today at 11 a.m. at the Central Church of Christ in Griswold. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. Billy Meister, age 68, of Manning, died September 12th in Des Moines. A memorial service for Billy Meister will be today at 1 o'clock at the United Methodist Church in Manning. Odie Funeral Home in Manning has the arrangements. Kim Lubeck, age 67, of Panora, died Thursday. Funeral services for Kim Lubeck will be held tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the St. Cecilia Catholic Church in Panora. Twig Funeral Home in Panora has arrangements. Ruth Cavalt, age 95, of Guthrie Center, died Saturday. Funeral services for Ruth Cavalt will be tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the First United Methodist Church in Guthrie Center. Twig Funeral Home in Guthrie Center has the arrangements. Wallace Ensley, age 86, of Avoca and formerly of Harlan, died Saturday. Funeral services for Wallace Ensley will be on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan. Randy Kent Ireland, age 62, of Lewis, died Friday. Memorial services for Randy Ireland will be held Wednesday at 1 o'clock at the Recon Dune Funeral Home in Griswold. Isabel Feldman, age 98, of Harlan, died Saturday. A massive Christian burial for Isabel Feldman will be Thursday at 10 a.m. at St. Mary's of the Assumption in Panama. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Richard Thomas, age 79, of Guthrie Center, died September 14th. Memorial services for Richard Thomas will be on Saturday at 10:30 at the Fairview Congregational Church in Stewart. Twig Funeral Home of Guthrie Center has arrangements. Calvin Knopp, age 93, of Atlantic, died Sunday at his home in rural Atlantic. Funeral services for Calvin Knopp are currently pending at Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. Linda Meyer, age 68, of Atlantic, died Sunday. Services for Linda Meyer are pending at the Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic. Earl Blunk, age 74, of Atlantic, died Saturday. Funeral services for Earl Blunk are pending at the Roland Funeral Home. And Mary Sanbothy, age 84, of Atlantic, died Saturday in Omaha. A massive Christian burial for Mary Sanbothy is pending at Roland Funeral Home. That is a check of the news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.